Welcome to Measured Impact, where we share behind-the-scenes stories of the world's leading mission-driven companies. Because when it comes to activism, brand building, and revenue growth, we believe profits and purpose aren't mutually exclusive. Let's dive in. Today, we are joined by Alex Pilkington. Alex is joining us as CEO of I Am Able. The I Am Able Foundation is a nonprofit, one that I was lucky enough to previously be involved with on the board. That is dedicated to empowering people of all abilities to move, thrive, and connect by removing barriers to adaptive fitness, sports, and the inclusive community support. Under Alex's leadership, I Am Able has really grown. I've been so psyched to see it happen over the last 5 years since I've been in new places and new spaces. And, you know, you can really see how well the organization is a well-oiled machine. Their primary focus is adaptive equipment grants, really innovative programming and community events that help individuals, veterans, adaptive athletes rediscover confidence, independence, and what's possible through movement and shared experiences. Alex, thanks for joining us, man.
Great. Thanks for having me, Neil.
So, Alex, before we get into too much about I Am Able, tell me a little bit about who you are and where you live.
Yeah.
What's your backstory?
I live just outside of Wyomissing, Reading, where the foundation is located, in a town called Pottstown, Pennsylvania. I've spent the better part of my all of my professional career in the corporate world. So once I left the Army, I was in the Special Operations Group. So I was an Army Ranger. I left there and started to get back into construction, which was what I was doing before. And I really just started asking questions of the owner of the company, right, just to see about ways we can improve what we were doing. Small organization, 6 people, rough crowd. Fortunately, the owner was open and I started asking questions and took that company from very small, $500,000 to 100 some odd people, 15 million working in 3 states. And I always preface this by saying I had no idea what I was doing. So I really thought about, you know, I'd like to do that I would like to continue to do that. It was something I was really enjoying. So that really led me on this path of, I went to computer school. That's how I thought I would get into the corporate world. Turns out that I was the older guy. No one was hiring me. So I started my first technology company with my 8 months of experience. So, you know, I spent time trying to build the business, right? Doing what I thought was supposed to be done and not necessarily ignoring my, you know, what I learned and my skill sets and what things that came natural to me and what I took from a special operations groups. And about 2-3 years into that, once I started to realize, hey, if I apply this, I didn't need to build a business. I need to create an environment where people could feel safe, saw a successful path, could grow. And that just led to, you know, hockey stick growth. Ran that organization for a number of years, sold it, did very well, created an advisory board to help reposition it for sale later. We did that, held various executive roles from small businesses, startups, to global organizations. 2009, I was with a startup, that person had all their eggs in the financial basket. And we all know in 2009 what happened, and started a second company for that. It's starting over, starting from scratch. It's always kind of a thing, I guess, in general. Wish it was a straight line, but I think everything that I've learned has been an experience. Yeah. So taking that, you know, kind of brings me to where I am today. I've done I've done executive coaching. I've done fractional COO work, kind of a broad base of things. That's it in a nutshell.
So because of my previous experience with I Am Able, I'm quite positive that you are not in the role for money. So yes. Give me a feel for what made you decide to get into the nonprofit space. What led you there?
Wow. Yeah. So a mutual friend of mine and Chris Keggs, the founder of I Am Able, I was having coffee with him one morning and he says to me, hey, I have this other guy. He's a veteran. If you'd be interested in getting to meet him. I'm like, yeah, I always love to meet other veterans. And he goes, well, he's a Marine. I'm like, well, I'm good. Thanks. So nothing against Marines. It's just, there's a mindset. So if anybody has ever met Chris, you realize that he's just an easy guy to get along with. We hit it off real quick. At the time I was a chief strategy officer for a growing startup. We had a couple meetings, Chris and I, we got breakfast, you know, and those types of things. And it was just really easy to connect and talk with him. And at that point in time, I had no idea, right, where this was going. So he still owned his gym, Core Fitness, and so on. So about a year or so later, he had reached back out to me. We stayed in touch, and he asked if I could help him with his the exit of Core Fitness so he could focus on his nonprofit. And I had exit experience, so I helped him through that. I got a little bit more involved than a normal positioning for exit, and you know that it's par for the course, I guess.
It's par for the course when it comes to Chris K. He knows how to get some help from smart people.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So we went through that, did the exit, sold the business, everything was fine. So sometime after that, so probably April of 21, he and I just got together for coffee, catching up, and you know he's like, "So how are you doing?" And I was like, "You know, I'm good. How are you?" And he's like, "Oh, I just, you know, I've got as far as I can go. You know, I need help to kind of move this thing forward." You know, I respected his humility, right? And at that time, he's like, "Well, what are you doing?" I said, "You know, at the time, I was doing more fractional work in general." And I said, "You know, I'm looking for a home, right? I don't want to retire. I'm not that kind of guy. I had two opportunities. I chose not to." And I said, "I'm just looking for a home, so something with a purpose, right?" So he's like, "Yeah, we should come work for us, but I probably can't afford you." And I said, "You probably can't." I said, "But I'm also not looking for a, you know, title or money. I'm looking for something that fits my why, right? Why am I here? I have a belief that we should be stewards of each other, right? We're on this blue ball together. We got to help each other get through it. It's not easy." So that led to conversations. In July 3rd of 21, I started as their COO, focused on growth. And, you know, I did have two concerns. You know, obviously one was working for Marine, but that was quickly put aside. And the other one was that I had no nonprofit experience, you know, really kind of starting and go, what is this, right? Didn't take long to quickly realize that it's just it's a business, right? You just don't make more widgets and hire salespeople. It's, you know, it's a different way of making things work. So that's how it started.
So give me a feel for what I Am Able does and who do you guys serve?
Sure. So we provide programs and services and events for folks with physical, cognitive, or behavioral challenges, as well as veterans with disabilities too. We provide grants, right? So it's all focused around our mission. When I got here, you know, I read the mission. We remove those obstacles and barriers that keep people on the sidelines. And a lot of times what people think is like, that's a physical barrier, right? You have a disability, so there's your barrier. And the reality is those aren't barriers to those people. A lot of times it's the financials, right? It's the money. It's the transportation. It's the little things that we as just, you know, able-bodied folks take for granted. So that's the basics of what we do as an organization, from providing grants, not just for adaptive equipment of all kind. We use the word adaptive instead of disabled, but not just for adaptive equipment, but we also are working to develop grant funding. We do have it for people to get in training, right? Everything that drives us from a decision perspective is, are we doing this in line with the mission, right? We've learned that some people can't come to some of our programming because, you know, they don't drive at night or whatever the case may be. That's the data points that help us to drive those decisions. Like, okay, how do we align with our mission to help these, you know, people get access to the services?
So I'm going to ask a hard question. I think if I remember correctly, I Am Able's sort of mission or a mission statement, at least some version of it, is to redefine what's possible.
Yes.
How would you measure that?
Right. So I'm sure you've seen this in your lifetime, in your career. Most organizations, they're always measuring by bottom line, right? So what is our top line? What is our expenses, right? Those financial metrics. My focus has never been on the bottom line, even in my own businesses. And we don't talk about it here. We all know that we need money to operate, but our focus is the impact. And so impact numbers are easy, right? They're black and white. Impact is different for everybody. So redefining what's possible for somebody is, you know, in line with our values, we meet them where they are. Because their definition of redefining for themselves might be different than someone who has a very similar condition. And, you know, it could be something as simple as I could do one push-up, or now I could do several. Right. Or it could even be that this is a real world example where young man was a couch potato, right? He's gaining weight. He's not very involved in the family, high level autistic, nonverbal. As he began to come into more of our programming and getting more involved, that young man is now pushing a 200 pound sled. His jumps up off the couch to help his parents bring in groceries. And his parents have said to us, like, we don't recognize him sometimes. It's just amazing the turnaround. That's a redefinition of what is possible for that person and that family. So to me, that's a win.
So when you think about those wins, and it sounds like, you know, a win can look different for every type of person that you're serving, especially you guys. I know you serve a pretty wide range of ages and disabilities and backgrounds. How do you measure the impact that you are having kind of in a macro sense, right? So if it's not on the bottom line as an organization, how do you guys think about, or how are you hoping that you can encourage everybody to think about, how do we make sure we had more of those wins next year than we had this year?
Right. So 2 years ago, I implemented the EOS systems, right? So we run on EOS, the Entrepreneur Operating System.
As do we. We're very nerdy, very big fanboys.
Okay, excellent. So, you know, that gives us the ability to do those, or, you know, our scorecard or metrics or dashboard, if you will, right? And not driven by dashboard, but, you know, we look at how many new people have come out to the program, right? How many continuous people have continued with programs? Are we seeing people go to one program and then go to another program, right? So there's a life cycle of things. Do they go to an event like the I'm Able Games and then they come into the program? Are they participating in different things? So that's, you know, that's a measure of impact that we look at of like, okay, we're doing the right thing. If we're seeing, we're in the middle of a digital transformation. So I'm a very big data guy. I like to drive data. But it's got to be the right data for what we need, right? So what drives those decisions? Our goal is to get more people with different abilities involved, engaged in a supportive community, and be conscious of the barriers that, you know, what we can do to help remove. So that's kind of the high level of what we do there. So it's about getting more people. We track those metrics weekly, as you know, if you use EOS. And then we ask those hard questions like, okay, why, right? The five whys. You know, why did it drip down? Is it the time of year and such like that? So as a team, we do that.
So for our listeners, Traction and the EOS system is sort of an operating system for your business. So it's something that I highly recommend, especially small business folks, nonprofits, and the like. And what it does is tries to sort of systematize the decisions that you're making. And for me and the Loose Grip team, it's very helpful for that. Just giving us a framework in which to operate and understand what's the right amount of things to try and achieve. Mostly what I think Traction does well for my team would tell you it does well for us is keeps me in a reality of saying like, no, we don't have to accomplish all this today. Like we have a quarter, let's do it in this quarter, we'll get it done. So one of the questions that I had, and you touched on it a little bit, but so with that data, whatever those data points are, do you have any examples of something that maybe you guys have changed your stance on or your mind on about the effectiveness or the possibilities or something that was driven by, you know, a data point that you found, something in terms of what classes were having the most impact or anything that comes to mind? Is there something that you sort of you say, actually, once we started tracking the data and getting everybody looking at it, we saw that we could make a better output by doing something different?
Right. So when I started here, you know, that's when Chris had just sold his business. I wasn't involved up until that point. I know that also meant that he left the building he was in. And then he became the shared space person with the people who bought his business. And, you know, the unfortunate thing is there's not a lot of time and space for our programming in that space. At the time, it was one program that was running called I'm Fit. And I'm Fit, part of the fun there is the chaos aspect. And it was all types of people. All ages, all disabilities, et cetera, right? So as we started to track, I think we were probably 2 years into it, I wound up hiring a program director. Becky Renix is doing an amazing job. So she brought her experience to the table. We started to look at the program and started to see, like, you know, those groups, right? So someone who has an IDD or an intellectual developmental disability works out differently needs different supervision than somebody who has a physical challenge, right? Someone who is older versus someone who is younger. So what we see, what we saw in this group is, okay, A, there's opportunity, but B, we have to manage, you know, how does this work? There's opportunity to provide a different type of service, if you will, a different type of program. So we could say someone who has a physical challenge can work out here, right? If you're in a chair, you have different workout requirements versus someone who's got, you know, an IDD aspect. And as the program, we saw that the program was at max capacity, right? So again, from my perspective, I'm thinking, okay, what's the risk, safety aspect? So those became data points that were very clear up front. And we made decisions to, so we obviously still have I'm Fit, still very busy, still one of our largest programs. But now we also have Redefine, which is a program for people 16 years of age and older who have physical challenges. And I hired a Jose Martinez, who actually coming up on 2 years in October, is our group trainer for both of those. He's also in a chair after an accident. It's important, right? When Chris was still training, when we brought Becky on over the time, unfortunately, Chris is not in a capacity right now to do that. So it's also important that we represent the community of folks that we're providing services to, programs. And Jose's great. He just brings level of energy. Not necessarily Chris, but he still just brings that positive energy to it. So that's some of the things we've really seen some big changes in our programming based on that.
It's clear you guys are thinking a lot about data and a lot about how you can measure the impact that you're having. I'm curious how you think about, you know, the reality is in nonprofit space, fundraising has to be a part of who you are. Grant writing, fundraising, whatever, however you're getting, keeping the lights on. How do you think about connecting those dots in terms of turning that impact that you're having into stories that can connect with your supporters? And when, what have you seen be successful there or not successful? Or how do you guys think about turning that impact and that measurement into a story that can connect with your audience or your donors?
Well, we certainly do not have a shortage of stories, shortage of great stories, right? Our challenge is capturing them all. It's a lot. The content is easily there, but it's obviously the time it takes to put it together. It's been a mission of mine to be able to demonstrate where the donors' dollars are going, right? And being able to connect those stories at a personal level, and that's what we're working towards. So you could say, hey, you know what, your dollars that you provided, your contributions have done these great things for us. And that gives you the warm fuzzy. What we're working to do here is, how do we start to connect at more of a granular level of, like, okay, so we have an endowment, right? We're looking at other ways to fundraise for our grant program. So I'm just using this as an example where we can say, okay, so you put money into this fund for training or adaptive equipment, then we can start to show the direct correlation of, you know, this is what you provided, this is what the outcome was. It's that direct connection. And that's what we're working to get to.
Yeah. One of the things I was always struggling with when we were in the early days of I Am Able, there was a lot more of a focus on equipment grants, and it was kind of the core focus. And as we rolled out things like I Am Fit and inclusive fitness programming, thinking about how to communicate with the supporters differently, you know, the old adage that everybody wants to build a school in Africa, but nobody wants to pay for a teacher to go teach there. You know, the physical things are kind of easy to say, hey, you donated some money for this hand cycle. Here's a picture of Johnny with his hand cycle, but saying, hey, we did 300 classes, or we did this many I Am Fit sessions that led to this story of this guy being a couch potato that's no longer a couch potato. I think you guys are doing a really good job trying to bring those stories to life. One of the questions I have is, how do you flag those stories? Like, how do you decide which, like you said, there's no shortage of potential tear-jerking interactions that happen in an idle environment. So how do you decide, hey, what are we going to, which stories can we tell best? And how do you guys think about deciding on which content's going to kind of connect with your audience most?
Right. I wish I could honestly say that we had a really cool system to figure that out. But the reality is, as the team, as we go through our year, there's certain things that bubble to the top, right? Certain scenarios, certain things that have been overcome. And that's really where we look at it, right? It's important to be objective. It's important to be diverse, right? To show a diversity of challenges that people have overcome as opposed to just one. We serve a lot of different types of folks. Organizations that might just serve spinal cord injuries, you know, that's what their stories are. But we provide different services to different people with different abilities. So it's important that we have diversity, not just in the ability, but in the person, you know, something that's unique that they've overcome or something like that. So that throughout the year, as we, you know, kind of compile those, there are certain ones that stand out a bit more. I'm a system guy, so I like to find a system for it. You know, but as you know, there is an emotional pull here that's you can't deny. You know, so that's really our system for doing it at this time.
So give me an example of how you think about it, and the folks on your team think about when you've decided on, hey, this story from X person is really, really strong. And we think it's compelling and it can connect with our audience. How do you think about deciding how to then get that to content, right? Are you guys thinking about video versus flat content versus email content? Like they all play a role, and I know you guys produce a lot of things. How do you think about deciding what format to use at any given time, or where to put your energy when it comes to all the thousands of ways you could use that a story like that? What works best for you guys?
You know, we had some of the "that's how we've always done it" mentality. We don't have that anymore because I don't believe in that, you know. It's like, okay, that's a starting point for change as far as I'm concerned. So it's important that from my perspective, right, everybody consumes their information differently. You have to look at different segments, different age groups, right, everything like that. So, you know, looking at this from of how do we reach those people where they live, right? How are they consuming information? So Ashley Tomasco has been with us since 2017. I think you might even know her.
Yeah, I know Ashley. She's great.
Yeah. So I asked her a couple of years ago to come on more in a larger capacity just because, you know, we need to have standardization from our marketing, branding, you know, et cetera. And she's been instrumental in really standardizing those platforms, standardizing those messages. Okay, so we have this content, right? Is it the fall appeal? So that's a flat. Right. But why don't we do it through, you know, electronic distribution, through other ways of doing it? And why not put, you know, the necessary calls to action on there as we need it? So just within the last 18 months or so, we've really started to explore not just the flat side of things, but okay, how do we incorporate this into a digital component? Video is huge. You know, I know some people have said to me, oh, you have to get on TikTok. But again, being a data guy, how do we know who's consuming on what platform? But surveying those folks, understanding how they're getting their data really drives that decision about how we're going to, you know, produce it.
And do you guys think about those audiences? I would have to imagine that the donor supporter audience probably consumes their information in a different way than your prospective participants or their parents. Potentially that might be an oversimplification, but when you guys are thinking about communicating to people who you want to get involved, not financially, rather like participants in programming or people who just, you want to get to just come find out more about the organization and what could be possible. How do you guys try to find more of those folks?
Good question. And it's something that up until recently, you know, I've done a lot of research where a lot of times those groups of people aren't necessarily targeted, right? And then if they do get information, it's so broad in general. It's important that our message is targeted to the individual so they can relate to the message. That's that pull, right? So how do we do that? How do we reach them, right? So there's various ways that you can collect information to go, okay, this is what we're going to do in this segment, and put that format together. It has to come from a data perspective. It also has to come from someone who the reader is, or who the person who is receiving it can see quality and value in it. So we talk about inclusive trail systems. And you can put all the signs up that you want, you know, hey, we're inclusive. A lot of times, and it's just like anybody else, if they don't see someone who looks like me or looks like them on in that trail system or riding a bike, that's that level of comfort that they need to go, okay, well, I'm going to go that next step, right? It's the, I knew there's a marketing term for it, right? The ladder of things.
Yeah.
So that's really kind of the approach that we have to look at. Like, all right, how do we reach these people? We've started to reach out to, like, from a veteran side, you know, we've been providing operationally from the front a veteran focused program for a number of years. It hasn't, up just until recently, it really hasn't grown. We're putting a significant focus to this. So it's like a unique opportunity where, okay, so we're not seen as a veteran service organization, right? So how do we get there? So it's positioning. Okay, so how do we do that, right? How do we reach out to those veterans? And then there's veterans of the new veterans compared to the middle age and the older veterans. There's a whole different, you know, reach there. So really just kind of taking it to the basic marketing approach, basic communication.
Yeah, there's a lot there you guys got going on, a lot of different audiences. I got to assume it's a big challenge to communicate to all of them in their own language. But, you know, kind of what I'm hearing is you guys know that representation matters a lot to these people, whether they're veterans or a disabled person. Being able to see themselves in that activity is kind of the first step to them getting involved in any facet.
And the challenge of being a nonprofit and, you know, working on an extremely tight budgets and, you know, every penny that we have, I know, has come from a place of hard work. So I respect that immensely. And I hope I work very hard to be a very good steward of that, of every penny.
When you guys are thinking about setting goals for the year, so whether that's in your traction planning or your fundraising or whatever, how do you think, how are you guys thinking about what the right sized growth goal is for you guys in any given period of time? And how do you talk about that internally?
Yeah. So, I mean, we do have our annual meeting through EOS and we sit down, you know, when I first got here, I know there were some questions or we'll call them suggestions from the board. Well, you did this last year, so do this year, right? If you did X, you can do Y. And my pushback was always like, well, how do we know X wasn't, you know, an anomaly? How can we quantify that we can actually do more, right? So when we look at our goals or annual goals, how we develop them, can we look at, okay, what did we achieve? You know, what were those factors that we got there? What were the stressors, right? If you're working 65, 70 hours a week and we got to this great goal, okay, that's a great goal, but at what cost, right? So when we look at those, in the coming year, it's not that we want to say, okay, well, we did 5,000. We've run, you know, we have 5,000 participants. Let's do 6,000. How do we quantify that we can, and what are those things that we need to have in place? Whether it's staff, resources, infrastructure, you know, space is our biggest challenge. Can we do that? And then we'll use space. It's like, okay, hey, it's a great idea. We would like to do this, but what are our challenges in front of us, and how do we, you know. Is that a realistic goal? So that's really the kind of how the conversation is. I also am very sensitive about, you know, chasing the shiny thing. I'm sure you can appreciate that, right? Hey, that's that. We're going to do that. Well, they're doing it, so let's do it too. You know, and it's always comes back to like, you know, does it align with our mission? Why do we have to do this? You know, those sorts of things. Is there a need?
When you're looking at that planning or even fundraising, give me a idea on what you think is data point or a measurement or a metric or a signal that is overrated that you're hearing people ask a lot about, or hey, it would be like you said, where you're trying to get people's focus out of going from 5,000 to 6,000. What's an example of a goal or a metric or a data point that you find people are drawn to that maybe is not as impactful as you would hope?
Part of me wants to say money, right? They're like, oh, how much money did you make? How much, you know, how many donations did you get? And again, you know, we all know we need money to operate and function. But to me, that's not a measure of what we're doing. That to me is a byproduct. If you don't provide a good service, value added, right? There's things that get there are people involved. You might still have the money because, you know, for whatever reasons people give. It's the continuum of people who give year over year, right? And then you can draw them in closer and closer. I think the money measurement is really kind of, it doesn't really provide a good show of progress, success. I think it becomes too convoluted.
Yeah, well, I don't know if your take is the same, so I won't assume it is, and I'll ask it as a question. But I was surprised when I got involved in the nonprofit space and when I got involved with organizations like I Am Able, how naturally drawn to fundraising as a goal and a conversation kind of took up a lot of the oxygen. And it seemed to me that it could kind of distract a lot from the conversations about impact and how much impact did we actually have with that money. And if the money's not resulting in impact, I just always felt it's an important thing, but it was never the thing. And in the nonprofit space, it really feels like the thing that gets talked about the most, right?
Yeah.
Is how much money did we raise? How much money are we going to raise next year?
So the bash is coming up, right? Our annual fundraiser. And so for last year, we had almost 800 people there. So that's great. That's amazing. This is the reach of the community. And I don't, each year we have to have this conversation. What is the goal, right? What is that financial goal? We do have it. And like I said, I don't like to focus on that. That's not the goal. The goal is for us. Our goal should be, how do we demonstrate what we've been doing, changing lives, redefining what's possible for people? And then, if we focus on that, the money will come, and for good purpose. We don't just have those one-time donors. We have people who continuously give.
Yeah.
So as much as I always like to try to drive the narrative to saying, yes, we need the funds, we need fundraising, but these are the things that we're doing. These are the things that we're planning to do. This is the why behind it. And people will get behind that more than like, okay, how much do you need? Right. I'll give you just enough, that type of thing.
Yeah. And I think when you guys are, if you're doing the kind of work you guys are doing and communicating it effectively, it'll come, right? Like it's an organization that people are very excited to support and they feel connected to. And I think if you're doing your job, which is to make sure that you're having an impact and then finding a way to tell that story, I think the money kind of, like you said, it's likely to come because there's people got to want to help and they want to help somewhere. And what a better way than you guys?
And they got to see it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, especially if you want them to do it again, right?
Right.
And if you're a good steward of their money, you're sort of saying, this is a program we're building.
So I don't know if you know, but this year we just got awarded our platinum level transparency from Candid. So that has been a goal of mine because I want to make sure we have that transparency to our donors and potential donors to say, okay, we are a level up organization, right? Our focus is transparency because I want you to have that confidence that when you donate your hard earned money to a foundation like ours, that there is a level of trust that we're using it to change the lives of people, like we say we do, as opposed to, not. So it's a goal.
Curious if you have any examples. One of the questions I love to ask folks on the marketing side, but I'm curious if it applies to you, is I think especially in the nonprofit space, there tends to be an assumption that you learn from your successes and then you do more of that. But I think there tends to be a little bit of a hesitation to kind of look away from things that maybe didn't go the way that you had hoped they would. And I think that tendency is strong in the business world, but it's also pretty strong, I think, in the nonprofit space. So can you give me any examples of sort of maybe something, an initiative, a goal, a campaign, or whatever it was that maybe didn't go the way you had hoped once you measured it, but then maybe changed how you guys provided an opportunity to learn from it?
Yeah. Well, first, let me start by saying that it's important as a leader to create a psychologically safe environment, right? I know I've had conversations with some of like our new folks and I'm like, hey, this is a fail-safe environment, right? Fail fast. And, that's the fail-learn model. And a lot of times people are like, what do you mean fail? That's just not a thing for them. You have to fail. That's the best learn. That's the best teacher. As long as it's a structured approach, right? Okay, I failed. I also don't like to do something once and say, well, that didn't work or didn't expect it to, the expectations were different because there's, that might be a one-off or something like that. I believe you should be three times to do something. So one thing that you might be very familiar with is Got the Nerve, right? So Got the Nerve has been 20 some odd years, 22 or 3 years. And when I got here, I attended it, just absolutely humbled and amazed.
Yeah, and for our listeners, Got the Nerve is sort of the start of I Am Able in a lot of ways. It's a triathlon that both able-bodied and adaptive athletes participate in. And so big crowd, a lot of success in the past.
To your question, right? So Got the Nerve, we did really well. You know, the first year, second year, we had the same race director, decided to change race directors. You know, we had that race director for 2 years. So we didn't have any measures in place when I first got here. I was for a couple months. So, you know, I was like, hey, good luck. And, you know, the second year, I had something more on the table. I started to put some, you know, kind of understanding to it. Let's see what we're talking. What was history like, right? I understand that Got the Nerve as a, you know, an event really drew an enormous crowd over the years. And it did very well from a fundraising perspective, et cetera. Although it was never really positioned as a fundraiser early on, but not near the end. So we started to put those measures, those metrics, those things we wanted to look at, right? And that up until just recently, several months ago, we made the decision as an organization to no longer move forward with Got the Nerve as a triathlon. And so obviously there are some hardcore folks out there who did the triathlon. They loved it. There was some like, oh my gosh, what's going on? It was, as you said, it was the beginning of the foundation, right? So that was not a decision made lightly. But, you know, when we started to look at the information, we started to get more able-bodied. It's harder to get, you know, people of different abilities. We started to focus more on that a couple years in with the second race director. And we wound up getting more adaptive athletes. Great. But our numbers overall were low just in participation. And I keep going back to our mission. Are we serving our mission, right? Our job is to provide, you know, opportunity for people with different abilities. We're inclusive. That's one of our values that we live by. But our job is to provide those, you know, opportunities for people with different abilities. And the hard decision was like, wow, the data is showing that this thing has not, A, produced what we wanted to do. There's less adaptive athletes. There's just less interest in athletes overall. It has become an exclusive event, right? Because of the cost and the everything that's associated with it. So if you're a standard able-bodied triathlete, you pay your $100, $50, whatever it is to participate. And, you know, you might have a very expensive bike. Well, if you're doing a, you know, the hand cycle, you know, you might, and you can't run, you have a push rim, you might have a different, we have one lady, she's got her running leg and she's got her riding leg, and those legs are $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, right? So it becomes an exclusive event. And while there's nothing wrong with exclusive events, if we look at our value system of being inclusive, right? And it became very clear, like, oh, we have to make a decision because we're not serving our community. And that decision was to continue with Got the Nerve as a brand. And what it's turned into is it's going to become a multi-sport track and field type of event. And it'll give us the ability to do it on a national stage. It'll give us the ability to have series in line with like Move United, so we can have competitive series. It's also going to be recreational, right? Because not everybody's an adaptive athlete. We should provide opportunities for recreation. So that was one of the hard decisions to make, based on the information.
Yeah. Well, I'll help the audience and double click there a little bit. Telling the I Am Able folks that Got the Nerve wasn't going to be a thing they were going to do anymore would have probably sounded like to some that you were Subway and you're saying you weren't making sandwiches anymore. Like it's a big part of the history. And so I'm really impressed that you guys were able to kind of take a transparent, realistic look at that and see where the impact could be better used.
Things run their course, you know, and there was an emotional attachment to this, to Got the Nerve. But when you start to put the, you know, the appropriate metrics around things. Still consider the emotional aspect, but at the end of the day, you know, we have to lead our mission.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, where can folks find out more about you, your work, or I'm Able?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Go to our website. It's www.imablefoundation, right? Just I am Able Foundation, no A, just iamable.org. We've just updated our website a couple months ago. It's super, super cool. We're constantly adding things to it, new pages, because we keep growing. And that's where I would start. Obviously, you can check me out on LinkedIn, and you can reach out to me that way if you'd like. And love to have a conversation with anybody who's interested. So,
cool.
Yeah.
Alex, man, this was awesome. I'm so psyched about all the stuff you guys are doing. And I am... You don't know how excited I was to hear that traction was being implemented at at I Am Able. So I'm really excited to get a chance to talk to you. Looking forward to seeing what else you guys did. And I really appreciate all your time today.
I appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity, Neil.
Yeah, thank you, Alex.